your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my life.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. The latest on health and healing, we're going to talk about the reishi mushroom, new information on it, daily toxin intake, just how many toxins are you accumulating and what can you do about it. Low oxygen levels in tumors trigger the spread of breast cancer. That's more important than what most people realize. I'll explain why. We have a lot on health and healing. From the environment, is Fukushima radiation decimating wildlife in the western portion of North America? We'll talk about that and something new. A commentary from Tom Carter, the pseudo-legal argument for a police state. I will be giving my own perspective on this because I believe we should know what it means when a federal judge says yes, the government can spy on you for your own benefit. Really? Well, there was someone there who actually heard people who were arguing about the coup in Haiti. A very short piece from Jean St. Vial from Global Research on what he had to say. I'll give you a clue. Quote, "The real problem with Haiti is that the international community is so screwed up and divided that they're letting Haitians run Haiti," end quote. Who said that? Well, a very powerful person, now in the Council on Foreign Relations, at that time, Assistant Secretary General of Organization of American States. And just 2 months after that, the U.S. Marines and U.N. troops invaded Haiti, got rid of Aristide. This is today, is the 30th anniversary of that. Don't plan on retiring, tell you why. And there was a incident where a nurse was who's pregnant declined to be vaccinated with the flu vaccine at her hospital, and she gave compelling evidence why, and the hospital said no, there's no reason that you should decline, and then they fired her. Then she went on television and a group of doctors went forward and saying that the flu vaccine has no harmful effects on pregnancy, actually is good for the developing fetus. Well, I'll respond. We'll take them on. And my guest will be Eileen Daneman, director of the National Coalition of Organized Women. We'll see whether or not the flu vaccine is safe and effective for pregnant women. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Now, most people don't eat very many types of mushrooms. We should. And the reishi mushroom, R-E-I-S-H-I, is one for a lot of reasons. First, it's very tasty, very easy to work with on a culinary level. You would prepare it very similar to how you would prepare a white cap mushroom or a shiitake mushroom. But that's not why you should be eating it. This mushroom has been used for treating disease for more than 2,000 years in China, but it has some extraordinary medical properties, and it's kind of pithy. It's shaped like a red, almost a reddish kidney shape, has a woody texture to it. What does it do? It lowers blood pressure. It improves nerve function. It enhances stamina. It helps you lose weight. And two conditions that the reishi mushroom has now been proven to benefit people are with cancer and diabetes. Now, as we know, cancer and diabetes are epidemic in the United States. Here's the latest from a doctors Lo and Zoli at the Bellarmine University. Quote, "Reishi mushroom contain important polysaccharides and saponins that decrease cell proliferation in cancerous lungs." And they discovered that this was due to what is called programmed cell death, meaning it instigates the cancer to commit suicide, kills itself. They concluded that detailed biochemical characterizations of this ancient herbal remedy could hold tremendous promise for the treatment of lung cancer. Then two other researchers did work at the Mara Institute of Technology in Malaysia, and they determined that the reishi mushroom in clinical trials was very beneficial in boosting the body's immune system to fight cancer and also to help with the effects of radiation therapy. So with cancer, it makes a difference. And they were using 6 500-milligram capsules 3 times a day. A separate group of studies published in the peer-reviewed journal Phytomedicine done at the Vascular Medicine at the Chinese University of Hong Kong found that reishi mushrooms lowers blood sugar levels and in laboratory experiments. So that is good, and it did it in just 1 week. So that's good for people with diabetes. A group of autopsies done on young people who died in accidents in Los Angeles found that they had tiny little holes in their lungs. That was due to air particulate matter. Air pollution is a big deal, but that's only one type of toxin that we bring into our bodies. Most people are not aware that we can bring in nano amounts, small amounts, in the drinking water out of the tap if it's not filtered. It's in the food that we eat. This is the latest study on this to show you what's in our food. Quote from Natural Society, there are chemicals in our food, our water, and the air we breathe, the clothing we wear, the carpet we walk on, and the plastics around us. And there's lots of it. But just how much toxic exposure do we really endure daily? The new study called Chemical Ape discussed just some of these chemicals and the impact they have. The United States, in all of its twisted glory, is likely the most toxic with its 70,000 chemicals in commercial use. And the vast majority have never been tested on humans. So we don't even know what effect they will have as individuals, chemicals, or in combinations. Modest estimates have said that there's more than 700,000 different toxic chemicals on a daily basis. And this does not include the crazy poisons that GMO companies are pumping into the food supply. According to Global Healing Center, it isn't abnormal to be exposed to 2,100,000 toxins each and every day in our society. So, okay, we've got all these toxins. Most of them you can't see, taste, or smell. What do? They can imbalance our hormones. They can create cancers. They can adversely affect the energy-producing cells of mitochondria. How do we get rid of them? That's not too difficult. According to researchers at the University of California, the average person is being exposed to cancerous levels of toxins like arsenic, dioxins, and DDE. And that's bad. Quote, 10 seconds of touching a receipt or quickly crumpling the paper up releases what are called, these are special toxins into your body. Even receipts, enough receipts, and you're much likelier to have adverse effects. End quote. Who would have thought that a receipt and the ink that's on it and the chemicals in the paper would be toxic? That's just as an example of how easy it is. So what do? We cannot eliminate all these toxins. It's not possible. So we have to spend more time in nature. That's clear. We should have a water filter. That would be a good idea. We should also eat clean food and wash your food before you eat it. Another good idea. We should have some just rubbing alcohol and spray it on doorknobs and surface areas so that we keep a minimal amount of exposure to toxins. Okay. And by the way, one of the listeners in this audience is a school teacher at a regular school out on Long Island and has been teaching for 25 years and said that for 22 years, every year came down with 1 to 2 colds and the flu. When it went around the class, this person got sick. Then started listening to this radio program 3 years ago and heard a program I did where I said, if you're a school teacher, in between classes, walk around the room with air therapy and spray it up into the air. It's mainly citrus, like orange or lemon, and that kills airborne particulate matter, viruses, bacteria. Then just take some simple rubbing alcohol and put it on a wet paper towel and just wipe down the desks. And that helps clean up the area immediately in your area. And then if you're a school teacher, just spray a colloidal silver at the beginning of the day around your mouth, and that will kill bacteria that otherwise would get into your nose and your mouth. She said she hasn't been sick once since, and her class suffers far less sickness. Detoxifying is the number one way that you eliminate toxins. The easiest way to detoxify is to use chlorophyll. Chlorophyll simply is without peer of cleansing the system of all toxins. Now, how do you get the chlorophyll in your body? It's simple. Chlorophyll is the color matter, not just green. It can be red, yellow, brown, purple. And therefore, when you have a fresh-made glass of grape juice or apple juice, beets, parsley, green leafy vegetables, watercress, arugula, kale, Swiss chard, beet greens, all of those are natural chelators. Spike it with vitamin C. That's a superstar chelator. Add in some green tea 2 or 3 times a day and flaxseed oil in the morning. All of those detoxify contaminants. And then when you have food, simply spray it, clean it before you eat it. Now, I'm making a salad. I never eat salads out for a simple reason, having owned 4 gourmet restaurants, vegetarian restaurants. I can assure you that even under the strictest standards, and I had very strict standards, there's still that person who's going to forget to wash their hands when they exit the bathroom, who will, in the middle of a busy, evening rush, and suddenly the salad goes low, they'll take salad right out of a basket and run some water over it real quick, not enough to do anything. And then you get served, and then you get sick. Or you have microorganisms or parasites that start taking up residence in your body, eating into the cells of your intestine. That's how it happens. Someone comes in who has herpes. You don't know they have herpes. No one does. They sit there, they drink, they eat, but you're washing the dishes in the kitchen. You're not sterilizing them. Well, now you can pass that herpes on to everyone else. Do you realize how many people get herpes from eating in restaurants? Yeah, these are the myths that we just have in our society. There's only certain ways you can get sick and no other way. It's not true. So when I get fresh organic lettuce in the farmer's market and it looks great and it's going to taste good, simply take a few minutes. Take each leaf, spray it with some kind of veggie wash, and then as you run water, just massage the leaf first on top and open it up and then flip it over, wash it on the bottom. Again, massage it because then you can get all that little organic material that you don't want in your body. You want it grown organically, but you don't want manure in your food. And then after you've massaged and rinsed the top and bottom, then you put it into a bowl. Now, once you have all your lettuce leaves done, then you run the water into the bowl until it's filled. Now then agitate it, shake the lettuce, and that allows any material you might not have reached or didn't see to become dislodged, goes into the water, and then you pour it out. Do that 3 times, then spin down your salad. Then you can put your salad into one of the ecological bags, salad bags. It'll keep it fresh for a week, and that way each day when you want your salad, it's clean, ready to eat. You don't waste any time. You can also make a large pot of brown rice or quinoa, any of the grains or beans, and put them in to a freezer bag. And that way you can do most of your cooking one day a week, and then you just have simple prep the rest of the time. But at least your food's clean. Now, as long as you're having a glass of green apple and lemon juice each morning, you're cleansing your blood of heavy metals, toxins. And if at some point in the day you add in wild oregano oil, olive leaf extract, cinnamon, and vitamin C to any juice, that'll dislodge a lot of parasites, bacteria, and viruses in the intestine. So that's how we're able to live in a polluted environment without succumbing to it. Now, one other thing, a lot of people don't eat enough avocados. And that's unfortunate because it's a great food to eat. People have this myth, oh, I don't want to get fat. Well, you're not going to get fat eating an avocado. Avocados are one of nature's most perfect foods. And in fact, it would really apply almost as a green fruit, though it is not in the fruit family as such. It is a superfood. It has all the amino acids that you would get from eating a steak. The avocado provides 18 essential amino acids needed to create complete protein in the body. And yet it has only good fats that benefit you. When you eat a piece of meat, first of all, it's putrefying in the gut because it's going to be about 3 days in your intestine at around 90 degrees, and that's putrefaction. It has no fiber. The avocado has fiber and doesn't putrefy. And it actually helps with constipation. Avocados are not loaded with hormones or antibiotics. Meat is. Avocados are not genetically modified, but the corn and soy feed that is given to the cattle or the chicken is. So you get all those benefits. Now, avocados are rich in phytonutrients, especially minerals, and including magnesium, one of the most important minerals for your heart. In fact, with magnesium, there are 300 cellular metabolic functions that can occur, and it helps your liver manufacture glutathione, which helps you detoxify. So definitely have avocados on a regular basis. And there's so much you can do with them. And if you don't want them to turn brown after you've cut them, just pour some lemon juice spray. If you saw my kitchen, I'm going to take a picture of my kitchen because I'm going to start another week to do my next cookbook. And I'm intending to have 300 gourmet vegan dishes that I'll finish within the next 2 months. And I have 50 or 60 large jars, glass jars, each one filled with a different grain or legume. But also I have little dispensers with little tubes, like little, in some of the restaurants you see where they squirt out mustard and ketchup, that kind of container. But these are filled with different liquids. You can put your oils in there, but also you can put what you want to accent. So if you want to accent with raspberries, you would puree raspberries with whatever you want to add to the raspberry. Like, for example, Manuka honey with raspberries makes a great consistency, and it sustains the taste of the raspberry. So if I put that in, and then I put some apple cider vinegar in with it, and some crushed red pepper, I can then put that into a little bottle. And then I can spritz that onto a salad. Now, it just is enough to wake up the flavor of the salad, not something that's going to load it down or make it wet. And hence, you spike the flavor, but you still feel the mouthfeel of the vegetable, the salad, and you taste the salad, but it's accented. So it's like the perfect combination of eating something that's really clean and really healthy and delicious, but also has a little sparkle flavor to it. And you could have 10, 15, 20, 30 different types of flavoring agents that you can add to different dishes, and you keep those in your fridge. And this way, You don't have to open up a whole jar. And what does the average person use? The average person, unfortunately, uses like soy sauce and some olive oil and salt and pepper, and that's about it. Well, that's boring. There's hundreds of ways you can make a dish. But I'm going to show you how to set up a kitchen. I'm going to photograph it, and everything I do, I'm going to photograph and then do an explanation. I'm going to post it. And this way, any of you who want to start doing more interesting and exciting food prep will have a kitchen all set up to do it. I'm Gary Noll. This is about health and healing, and that's what we focus on a lot. Now to our environmental segment. We have already discussed in depth the amount of sea life that is being diminished on the West Coast from Alaska clear down to the coast of Mexico, including hundreds of millions of starfish simply disintegrating, and large lesions and bleeding ulcers on polar bears and other aquatic life gets worse. This is the latest on the impact of Fukushima that our White House, our EPA, refuses to acknowledge. So we're not talking now about sea lions, polar bears, sea stars, turtles, sockeye, salmon, herring, anchovies, and sardines. All of those have been adversely affected, and they're dying at levels never seen in American history before. The latest, and this is from the Los Angeles Times from yesterday, quote, bald eagles are dying in Utah, 20 in the past 2 weeks alone, and nobody can figure out why. Many suffered, quote, from seizures, head tremors, and paralysis. Many of the eagles were brought to the Mammoth Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in northern Utah. Within 48 hours, most were dead. State wildlife specialists are baffled. For weeks, officials have sent birds for autopsy. At first, the agency's disease scientists guessed the illness could have been encephalitis, which is caused by the West Nile virus, but later ruled that out as a possibility. Officials suggested the die-off is possibly connected to the deaths of thousands of aired grebes that began in Utah in November. Now, that doesn't work either. So what is the answer? Well, when a few of the scientists suggested it might be from radiation, they were told, can't answer any of that. Have to go through the EPA. EPA doesn't answer it. Now, here's the idea. How many bald eagles normally die in a year? Because these are extremely hardy creatures. About two. So two in a year, and now they got 20 in 2 weeks. Well, what do the eagles eat? Fish. Where do they get the fish? In the ocean. And there we see sick and diseased and immune-compromised fish. This isn't that hard to put together, but for political reasons, they're choosing not to. I'm concerned about what has happened to our rights. I believe that any person who believes in the Constitution as being the guiding principle for our country and the Bill of Rights is also equally concerned. But U.S. District Judge William Pauley's ruling in the case of the ACLU versus Clapper just 3 days ago, which sanctions Dragnet National Security Agency surveillance of the telephone records of the entire country, has immense significance for democratic rights. According to Tom Carter, although it is written by a federal judge, it is not so much a, quote, legal opinion as it is a fascistic-style polemic that advocates scrapping the U.S. Constitution and implementing a police state. The fact that a federal judge makes such arguments is a significant indication of the extent to which a pro-dictatorship consensus has developed within the highest levels of the judicial system. The entire opening section of the opinion is a self-consciously political case for police state spying and silencing whistleblowers. Responding to U.S. District Court Judge Richard Leon's decision earlier this month calling the National Security agency surveillance almost Orwellian, Judge Pauley employs an argument that every dictatorship throughout history has made in one form or another, and that the national security and the threat of terrorism necessitate the abrogation of democratic rights. This is nothing but a variation of an argument made by Nazi jurist Carl Schmitt that state interest, as determined by an all-powerful executive, may warrant a state of exception during which the Constitution may be suspended and democratic rights trampled upon. According to Judge Pauley, the attacks of September 11, 2001 justified that. The opinion is riddled with lies and distortions. The principal lie is that the action of the U.S. government is justified by the demands of the struggle against al-Qaeda. This is a claim that cannot withstand scrutiny. The so-called war on terror has provided a pretext for the implementation of policies that would not, without the claim of a grave national emergency, be accepted by the public. Moreover, while it is supposedly at war with al-Qaeda, the United States government is currently providing weapons, funds, and even side-by-side military cooperation to its al-Qaeda-linked terrorist friends in Libya and Syria. And as we have stated on this program many times, the real purpose of the war on terror is not to fight al-Qaeda. Rather, it is to justify militarism abroad and to lay permanent siege to democratic rights at home. Likewise, the idea that the United States government has built up a gigantic spying apparatus in order to catch al-Qaeda terrorists does not pass any test. It is now well known, thanks to the courageous actions of the National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden, that the U.S. intelligence apparatus spies indiscriminately on the entire world, including foreign political leaders. In his opinion, Judge Pauley acknowledges the breadth of the government spying program at issue, only to bluntly contend that the government snooping into the telephone records of every American is necessary. The basic conception of the American Constitution is that the natural tendency of government towards tyranny can only be blocked by a careful separation of powers and ironclad rights watched over by a vigilant public. In this spirit, the American revolutionaries wrote the Fourth Amendment, part of the Bill of Rights, in 1791, which clearly provides the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, requiring each government search or seizure to be backed up by a particular warrant supported by probable cause. It's simply not happening today. And that's the problem. So, notwithstanding its pretensions as the leader of the free world, the United States government has a rather unusual record. Now, I did a series of 5 one-hour special broadcast called Intervention in the Name of Peace, Freedom, and Democracy, which showed that every single time the United States used those terms when it was involved in another country, it was always to, in some way, engage in undermining democracy. But let's just look closer to home. Over the past 100 years, we have engaged in legally sanctioned segregation, lynching, mass roundups and deportations. Remember the Japanese Americans in the Second World War? Infiltration and surveillance of dissenting peaceful political groups, red scares, war crimes, corruption, criminality, coups, assassination, torture, lies, weapons of mass destruction that we created. Yes, and so it goes. So that's what we've engaged in. So for Judge Pauley, he doesn't seem to remember or find any of that. It's unfortunate. So this is the language of fascism. I've been talking about America becoming a police state. And every time we find something new, we see we're already there. This should all be taken as a great political warning. American democracy is rotting on its feet. The drive toward dictatorship can be stopped only through united actions by the working class. the working class, hasn't decided to cooperate with each other yet. My hope is that in the near future, they will. Also, one other issue. This is something you have not heard before. This is from Jean Saint Vial. Quote, on December 31st, 2003, I was in Haiti to honor the bicentennial of Haiti's independence. It was very late. I'd already gone to my room for the night. But my good friend, Jean Saint Vial, had come to the Montana Hotel to meet up with me. He called from the front desk. I took the elevator down and found a heated conversation in progress with U.S. career diplomat and current member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Luigi Ignotti, who was then the Assistant Secretary General at the Organization of American States. Journalist Kevin Pina was arguing with him. What he said as he exited towards the elevator up to his room was so astounding, I took out a pen and paper and wrote it down. On the eve of Haiti's 200-year independence, the Organization of American States had said, quote, the international community is so screwed up, they're letting Haitians run Haiti, end quote. So why is that important? Because shortly thereafter, a group of men and women decided to tackle what in their view constituted the real problem with Haiti. So on January 31st, 2003, the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti was a secret meeting of non-Haitians held at the request of a Canadian minister, Denis Paradis, P-R-A-A-D-I-S, and it was decided to conduct a coup d'etat to overthrow Haiti's president and put the country under UN tutelage. On the last day of that same year, December 31st, 2003, that declaration was made. Less than 2 months after that, then Assistant Secretary General of the Organization of American States uttered those infamous words at the Montana. Then there was the coup, and it was the dead of night, and U.S. troops entered the residence of Haiti's democratically elected president, kidnapped him and his wife, and dumped them more than 20 hours later in the French neo-colony known as Central African Republic. So that's a little piece of history that we can put in proper perspective. I'm Gary Nall. Now we're going to play a short piece on something that concerns us. A nurse who is pregnant, who's had 3 miscarriages, chose not to get the flu vaccine out of fear it would adversely affect her developing fetus. She was fired. This is an interview with her on CBS News. We will respond, and I have my guest standing by, Eileen Denneman, director of the National Coalition of Organized Women, to respond to this.
Good morning, Rash. I'm Crystal Lathan. One Pennsylvania woman was fired from her job as a nurse because she refused to get the flu shot. CBS This Morning says Lancaster General Hospital, Dreyana Brayton's employer, required its employees to receive the flu shot earlier this fall.
So it's frustrating to me to be forced to do something that you're not comfortable with.
Brayton is currently pregnant with her second child and has already suffered 3 miscarriages. CNN says Brayton told the hospital she wouldn't get the flu shot because she couldn't find enough studies that focus on the effects of the vaccine on pregnant women. Brayton told Fox and Friends she obtained a letter from her family care physician requesting she be exempt from the flu vaccine because it may cause her stress. But that wasn't good enough for her employer.
In response to that letter, my employer replied that that was not a medically necessary reason to be exempt from the flu vaccines.
CBS This Morning spoke with a doctor who says Brayton could have benefited from the vaccine.
Not only does the flu shot offer some protection to the pregnant woman, but there's a bonus. You see, the pregnant woman can pass some of that prevention into her newborn baby.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists advises all pregnant women to receive the flu vaccine, saying it's an essential part of prenatal care. And no study to date has shown an adverse consequence of an inactivated influenza vaccine in pregnant women or their offspring. Brighton is not planning on taking any legal action against the hospital. Instead, CNN reports she said she wants the hospital to reevaluate its policy on vaccines for pregnant employees.
All right, that's, you heard them say there is no evidence, no study showing that there is a danger of the flu vaccine with pregnant women. I beg to differ. My guest is on the line now. Eileen, nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Before,
great.
I'm going to turn it over to you in a few moments, but before we do that, I want to respond directly to the physicians on CBS and to the American Academy of Pediatrics, and to all the people who are concerned on this issue. First and foremost, according to all official health reports, we're now fully in flu season. And it's that time of year when public health officials, physicians and pediatricians and pharmacists warn that everybody over 6 months of age and older should protect themselves and get vaccinated. This includes renewed propaganda to influence pregnant women to protect their unborn child, as you just heard this man say, and to threaten healthcare workers with job termination if they refuse vaccination. In fact, women, mainly nurses, working in local hospitals in the greater New York area have informed me that they must wear masks the entire time because they refuse to get vaccinated. Now, a recent case that has received widespread media attention across the major networks was just what we just talked about, this Brenton woman, and from her job at Horizon Healthcare Services in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, for refusing the flu vaccine. And having gone through thousands of hours of research on this topic and examined the peer-reviewed literature carefully, especially regarding the flu vaccine safety, we believe that what was said by the doctors is wrong. Brenton made the decision herself to reject because she felt the lack of safety outweighed the vaccine's benefits. The question with all vaccines has always been whether or not the studies support federal official and medical establishment claims. There is a very simple reason why the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists notes on their website, quote, "No study to date has seen an adverse consequence of inactivated influenza vaccine in pregnant women and their offspring," end quote. This is because no such study has been accurately designed and performed to determine the flu vaccine safety in pregnant women. The American Academy of Obstetrics and Gynecologists and the CDC are not legally required to tell the truth about anything. They can spin words and science to their heart's content without legal repercussions for wrongdoing or criminal behavior. Now, nobody takes these associations and the federal agencies to court for cherry-picking their studies or conducting remarkably poor clinical trials in order to promote their personal agendas and lies. However, private vaccine makers are required to provide the most accurate information available to vaccine administrating physicians and healthcare workers on manufacturing package inserts. This is not only required to educate physicians about the vaccines being given to their patients, but also to provide a rough guideline in the event of vaccine adverse effects and injury. And what do we find on these inserts if only the people at CBS or these physicians or even the nurse had looked? Almost categorically, there is the warning, quote, "Safety and effectiveness have not been established in pregnant women or nursing mothers for these flu vaccines, all of them." Quote, this is from the vaccine manufacturers. If they had only taken the time to do a little bit of homework, quote, "safety and effectiveness have not been established in pregnant women or nursing mothers for these flu vaccines." Now, there is a single question that needs to be answered. What is the actual gold standard proof to claim that the flu vaccine is safe for pregnant women and will do no harm to her fetus? There is none. Let me repeat that. There is none. Nor is there any valid evidence that flu vaccines are effective. In an interview that we did with Dr. Thomas Jefferson, coordinator of the Cochrane vaccine field in Rome, Italy, he stated, that he conducted a thorough review of 217 published studies on vaccine flu vaccines and found only, quote, 5% reliable. In other words, 95% of all published flu vaccine studies were flawed and their conclusions should be dismissed. This is not a great surprise. Even the CDC officials were forced to confess that, quote, influenza vaccines are still among the least effective immunizing agents available, and this seems to be particularly true for elderly recipients, end quote. Dr. Anthony Morse, a distinguished virologist and a former chief vaccine officer at the FDA, found, quote, there is no evidence that any influenza vaccine thus far developed is effective in preventing or mitigating any attack of influenza. The producers of these vaccines know they are worthless, but they go on selling them anyway, end quote. Also, Dr. Peter Dawshi at MIT and Johns Hopkins University just this a month or two ago published a devastating report in the British Medical Journal discrediting the official fear tactics about flu season. In the report, Dawshi says, quote, the vaccine may be less beneficial and less safe than has been claimed, and the threat of influenza seems to be overstated, end quote. He notes that the study published by an Australian team found, quote, one in every 110 children under the age of five had convulsions following vaccination in 2009 from the H1N1 influenza vaccine, end quote. Separate independent studies conducted in the UK, Finland, and Sweden concur that the flu vaccine directly contributed to the rise in cases of narcolepsy following receipt of GlaxoSmithKline's vaccine. The conclusion is that the vaccine triggered an immune reaction against the children's sleep center cells. If these serious events are occurring among children, what are the true adverse effects happening in an unborn developed fetus in the womb when the mother is vaccinated? The CDC website states, quote, if you are pregnant, a flu shot is your best protection against serious illness from the flu. A flu shot can protect pregnant women, their unborn babies, and even the baby after birth, end quote. Okay, this is the same organization that chose to allow nearly 500 African Americans to suffer for 40 years with syphilis and use them as human guinea pigs, not an agency known for its integrity, honesty, or even the brilliance of its scientists. To the contrary, these are some of the dumbest human beings in the world. And yet, they stated this. So what is your proof, CDC? Show us. Show us the proof. You've made a statement. You've put pregnant women's lives at risk, their babies, developing babies at risk. Surely you have a gold standard. Surely someone at the American Academy of Pediatrics would have the integrity to stand up for women first instead of the pharmaceutical company or bad dogma. No. Wrong again. You would expect that this were true, that they could back up their claims. Then we would find this mention on the flu package insert, but we don't. For example, for the H1N1 vaccine inserts, we find, quote, it is not known whether these vaccines can cause fetal harm when administered to pregnant women or can affect reproduction capacity, end quote. Surprisingly, few vaccine studies have been performed on pregnant women, and none of them, according to Dr. Jefferson, are high quality. While some extremely poor trials have been conducted, the CDC's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease research into the potential dangers and risks of the flu vaccine to both mom and fetus is negligible. After evaluating all flu vaccine studies on pregnant women and finding them, quote, artificial, end quote, in the way that they were designed and carried out, Dr. Jefferson concluded, quote, I would be very cautious about vaccinating unborn babies, end quote. The New York Times published an article touting the CDC myth of flu vaccine safety for pregnant women. The Times quoted Dr. Jay Butler, the CDC's chief of swine flu vaccine task force, to relieve fears about flu vaccine adverse effects, especially to pregnant women. Dr. Butler said, quote, there are about 2,400 miscarriages a year in the United States. You'll see things that would have happened anyway, but the vaccine doesn't cause miscarriage. It doesn't cause auto accidents, but they happen, end quote. Really? Not very reassuring to expectant mothers across the country, especially since none of the approved H1N1 vaccines used at the time had undergone rigorous clinical safety trials on pregnant women or the potential adverse effects of mercury-laced vaccines and other ingredients such as spermicides, detergents, and cosmetics on the developing fetus. Now, Last year, the National Coalition of Organized Women received documents that we will talk about in a moment with my guest, and they are startling and put to the lie everything, I repeat, everything that the news media, the New York Times, the CDC, the American Academy of Pediatrics has said about the safety and efficacy of vaccines for pregnant women. The CDC has refused to provide further information under the Freedom of Information Act filing until after a three-year period, a direct violation of the Freedom of Information Act law. When confronted and queried about the rise in fetal deaths among vaccinated pregnant women, the CDC's doctor confirmed the agency knew of this increase. A study appearing in the journal Vaccine provides a strong warning against administering the flu vaccine to pregnant women. The study observed a rise in inflammation in pregnant women that relates directly to preeclampsia and leading to premature births. Commenting upon this study, Sarah G., founder of Green Med Info, wrote this should be expected given, quote, the highly inflammatory, neurotoxic, and immunotoxic ingredients found in flu vaccines. In a recent year, at the height of the swine flu, we published a review of safety trials conducted by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease for pregnant women, persons with asthma, and co-administration of the H1N1 and seasonal flu vaccines in healthy adults and the elderly. Once again, these studies display the power of deceptive science for propaganda use. At that time, results were twisted, kneaded, and molded into a smiley face, plastered on the CDC and pro-vaccine health websites, and aired across the media waves to convince us to rush out to our nearest vaccination facility. Those particular studies were performed in collaboration with Novartis and Sanofi Pasteur, each a manufacturer of the approved H1N1 vaccine, and all of them flawed. The American public has every reason to be suspicious over our health officials' vaccine claims. Your comments on what you have found, the studies that you have, the statistics you have, and why this woman did the right thing. Eileen?
Hi, Gary. Gary, there is one epidemiological study that we did that clearly shows that the pregnant women in 2009/2010 flu season, where it was called the H1N1 pandemic season, clearly we have an epidemiological study that clearly shows that during that season, that when pregnant women were coerced by their doctors to get a flu shot, disregarding its mercury content, that fetal loss, according to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, which is the government's own reporting system that doctors are supposed to report a temporal relationship between giving a person a vaccine and some kind of adverse reaction. It's very underreported, but it's relative. In other words, you could see from the Vaccine Adverse Reporting System last year and the year before, you can see that there was four miscarriages this year and seven miscarriages that year. So it's all relative. So it actually works as a comparative study. So we followed the pregnant women on the VAERS data, and we also followed the pregnant women from the Internet, where women were just interneting all over the place that they were having miscarriages. So we found two sources then of a documentation on miscarriages during that season. So we were able to do an even more tight study that had two sources of these miscarriages. And so this particular study is really important because when they say, oh, there is no testing for fetal loss or there's no testing for this, for that, this was a big test, a big experiment on the public as if it were in a laboratory, all right? You don't have to have Merck, do a clinical trial, in some voluntary or obscure way. This was a mass experiment on people, okay, on fetuses and on pregnant women. And the results of this study that we pulled together is that there was a 4,250% increase in miscarriages and stillbirths during that H1N1 seasonal flu initiative by the Centers for Disease Control. That's 4,250%, okay? Now, so during that year, okay, during that year, the CDC promised everyone that we're going to push this on pregnant women because we're concerned that the flu shot is really harmful for pregnant women, okay? This is untested, but we're going to be really on top of it. Which is Dr. Marie McCormick was the head of the new group that was created called Vaccine Risk Safety and Assessment Working Group. That was the group with Marie McCormick, who, by the way, many years ago during the Verstraten debacle, during that time, she said we would never connect autism and vaccines. Okay, this very same woman was the chairperson in 2009 and 10 that's supposed to oversee all the reports coming in for this untested vaccine. So in the early in the game, because I was on the telephone with the whatever agency that was, and she was there, that follow the pregnant women, because already by the time I was on the telephone, there was already maybe 2,000% rise in fetal loss. So from the VAERS alone, from the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. So this Marie McCormick and their group, they look at Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System for Guillain-Barré and for this other thrombosis type of illness, and they always look at VAERS. But they did not look at VAERS for pregnant women. Okay? Meanwhile, I mentioned, hey, look at VAERS for pregnant women, which they should have been looking at. It's already up, 100 compared to like 7 the year before. And so Dr. Maria McCormick and this public working group that's supposed to alert the OBGYNs to like what's happening, they did not. In other words, all the nation's OBGYNs were not notified in real time that there's a massive, massive spike in fetal deaths going on. Now, why didn't they notify the OBGYNs? Because if they did, the OBGYNs could have actually decided whether they should stop this protocol. And if the song on the street would have been that this vaccine program for pregnant women was awful, was a dead issue, stop it. It would have ruined the new program to immunize, quote unquote, in utero. So they didn't say anything on the fly. I call that willful misconduct. Okay. Now, so here we have Dr. Marie McCormick at a meeting with me, but she was on the telephone. And the interesting thing is that my presentation on paper, because I was late, was actually handed to these 18 or so members of the ACIP conference, the people that work for the CDC to recommend vaccines. My papers were actually placed in front of their face kind of by accident. Well, we can say the cosmos did it. Anyway, so Dr. Marie McCormick's on the telephone from Atlanta or wherever she's calling from, and she starts to talk, blah blah blah, and everybody's looking at my documents, and so all of a sudden the chairman says, Jeff Evans says, hold it, stop reading, Dr. McCormick's on the phone, this is not her paper, just listen to her. Okay, but meanwhile, these committee members already saw that there was this huge increase in fetal deaths. It wasn't in percentages at the time, but it was very clear, huge, huge increase. So after Dr. Marie McCormick finished, one of the people in the committee says to her over the phone, has there been any adverse events for pregnant women? And she says, no. So I had that in writing, in the testimony, that she denied any adverse reactions for pregnant women. Then a week later, so then my thing came up. I explained my study, the study and all that kind of stuff, but she already hung up the phone. The next week, I'm on the telephone again with Washington, one of their agencies, and she's on the phone again giving her spiel. So she gives a spiel about Guillain-Barré, which may be up 3%. There's a little signal. I mean, 3%, 6%, whatever. Oh, but no worries. You know, that's not much, right? So meanwhile, this is going out through the roof. So anyway, she finishes her spiel, and then somebody says, Dr. McCormick, has there been any adverse responses for pregnant women? And she basically says, no, again, oh, in where we looked at it was VAM, so we looked at it here, we looked at it there, and there's no problems, okay? So she says it again. Anyway, at the end of the season, there is definitely corroborated now by the CDC, because we kind of, pulled their pants
Eileen,
down.
We're running out of time. Let me ask you one quick question. I need a short answer.
Okay.
From your group's research, do you have compelling evidence that the flu vaccine to pregnant women would increase the likelihood or probability of their infants dying or having miscarried?
Yes.
Okay, that's all we need
to
know.
I'll tell you where people can look at it. If they go to HET, which is a Human and Environmental Toxicology Journal, so it's HET Journal. And once they get there, they put in Gary Goldman. He's our scientist that did the statistics. They will find the free access study. It's called the Comparison of VAERS Fetal Loss Reports During 3 Consecutive Influenza Seasons. So they just kind of run down there, Gary Goldman, HET Journal, and they'll find the study that every pregnant woman should carry around with them when they're asked to get a flu shot.
Eileen, thank you very much for all the good work that you're doing as the director of the National Coalition of Organized Women. And the website is progressiveconvergence.com and vaccineliberationarmy.com, two separate websites. Now we have information that should be more than compelling to the nurse. You have the opportunity now to file a lawsuit against the hospital because you could provide evidence that would sustain in a court of law to get your job back and to bring it to other nurses and doctors' attention that this is not what the people, the talking head doctors who were misinformed and wrong on CBS News stated. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Now, we just have a moment. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, if people are infuriated by what they just heard, then they must be brain dead. But I can't believe that your audience is brain dead. In fact, these are the kind of people, Gary, the people that are interested in these topics that have signed up for your new retreat. These people are passionate about their freedom, and they want to delve more into the issues. We are full at this point. We do have a waiting list. I have people that are waiting to see. I've had some people that came to past retreats that said, I want to give new people a chance to come in. So if you want to get on my waiting list, you can give me a call at 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. And this is just the kind of discussions that I'm having with people. They want to delve more into these very topics that you're bringing up on your show.
People are listening in. Here's the latest. I just received the latest Google Analytics. For the last week, people coming over to Progressive Radio Network, 95,842 unique visits in the last 6 days. That's a whole bunch of people. Those are new people.
Well, what happens, Gary, is that I had a gentleman call me that said, He found you on the radio dial accidentally, of course. But he said to me, not only was I completely intrigued and had no idea of what the truth was, but he's now told all of his friends. This is a college guy. And he said, I told all my friends and we're all listening in. It's spreading like wildfire. And I said, well, that's encouraging to hear, because the more people we get involved with, this is not about you. This is about the truth, about the information, about people being more aware and conscious. That's what we're doing here. Amazing stuff.
Thank you, Luann.
Speaking of being more conscious, Gary, I have people emailing me every day about these dance videos that you have on your site. people are saying, I'm seeing myself from the 80s or the early 90s, and, you know, the outfits, the hair, and people are just having a ball looking at these dance videos. It's a blast.
It is. People can go over to the Progressive Radio Network or Gary Nall or the Facebook and watch them. It's fun. There were about 40,000 listeners who attended those. So go back and have yourself a good laugh and watch people having a good time. These were just amateur videos shot by people in the audience who sent them over to us, so we just put them up. And now let's say hello to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht.
Hello, Gary, and hello, Luann, if you're still there. Today, of course, is the last open forum of the year, so listeners better speak now or until 2014, hold their peace.
Excellent. Here we go.
Last and Happy New Year, Gary.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you.